First, I didn't get a chance yet because I didn't see you to thank you for the beautiful gift that you sent me before Pesach. So thank you very much. I appreciate the appreciation. So, Baruch Atah Adonai Elohim HaOlam Shehakol Nehiyah Midoro. We only have a few classes left. I think we have another five or six. Till the end of May, right? So we talked about before Pesach about the concept that is called Tikkun HaMidot. I explained that the Talmid, the student of the Arizal, Rabbi Chaim Vital, these chairs over here. I'll rewind just 2 minutes.
What?
I'll rewind.
Sorry.
So you can also follow. So before Pesach, we talked about the concept that is called Tikkun HaMidot, working on my attributes or refining myself. I mentioned that the student of the Arizal, that happens to be Bashgacha Prati today, is his Yahrzeit, Rabbi Chaim Vital, that he says that Torah and mitzvahs are a must. You have to do Torah and mitzvahs, you have to follow the Torah. And that's like air and food to our soul. The same way that you do not deprive your body from air and from food, you cannot deprive your soul from Torah and mitzvahs. That's a given. All the Jews are equal. We all have to do the same thing. There's no discounts. There's no one is better than the other. One has to do more. The only time that we find that there are types of Jews that they have to do more are only priests, Kohanim, that they have much more mitzvot. That's the only difference. But in the majority of the Torah, all the Jews are equal, we all have to do the same. So Torah and mitzvahs are the food and the air to our soul. But the main thing that we came down to this world to do is to refine our midot. So in the next couple of classes, I want to talk about, first of all, today what we'll go through is, in general, the idea, what does it mean to fix our midot, to work on our attributes, to refine ourselves. Bezalel Hashem, in the next couple of classes, till we're done, I will try to go through some of the major midot that we have to deal with. Because the bottom line is, learning Torah is beautiful, and to learning insights of the mysticism of the Torah, nice. But if I don't get tools to life with what I learn, then besides being nice and besides having a mitzvah of learning Torah, I don't get anything out of it. And the point is that our sages teach us, Amaseh Haikar. The action is the main part. That if I learn 10 hours a day Torah and I don't bring it into action, then I'm missing the point. And if I live throughout my life in this world and I didn't do what I was supposed to do in this world, that I basically missed the opportunity. So again, Torah and mitzvahs are the basics. This is the roadmap. This is the instructions. The Torah comes from the word in Hebrew, hora'ah, to teach. So the Torah came to teach me. Most people, they oppose the Torah because the Torah comes to teach me things that I'm not happy to hear about because it's not comfortable to me. I want to be comfortable and I want to do what I want because that's my will. And the Torah, in many cases, comes and tells you, I'm very sorry that this is your will and this is what you want, but it's not the right way. The Torah is the manual to this world. And if I want to go through this world and not have to come back here to fix what I damaged in a previous reincarnation or to at least complete what I'm supposed to do in this world. The Arizal explains that all of us are reincarnations. We all come down here many times. And we all have to come down here as many as times that it takes to complete 613 mitzvot in thought, speech and action. You can do it in one time, you can do it in 50 times. The reality is that we only know about one person that did it in one shot. And that's David HaMelech, King David. That he was able to do all 613 mitzvot in thought, speech and action in one shot, and there's no reincarnations of David HaMelech. There are different Kabbalah books that different Mekubalim were actually pointing out whose reincarnation. And we know that David HaMelech, there's no reincarnation. He was able to come down one shot and finish it. So the point is that I don't want to come back here anymore. I want to complete what I came to do down in this world. And the only way to complete it is by going to the manual, seeing after how I have to conduct my life in this world. And again, in many cases, the instructions of the manual are not going to be exactly how I want. This is where I meet the roadblock, and if I'm able to go over this roadblock, then I'm able to receive from the manual, from the ultimate truth, the only truth that is out there, all the theories, all the teachings, all the things that people come up with, because the only thing that is not from human being is the Torah. Everything else was brought down from a human being. The Torah is the only divine book that we have. And for thousands of years, thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not millions, try to prove that the Torah is also not divine. And nobody was able to prove that the Torah is not divine. The Torah is the only thing that came from Hashem. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it, that's a whole different thing. And the fact that later on came the sages and the Chachamim and the oral Torah and everybody contradicts all that. It doesn't say like this in the Torah. That's a whole different discussion. But the point is that the only truth that is out there is the Torah. And if I want to be successful in this life, then it's only if I follow the instructions of the Torah, because the Torah knows exactly what's good for me. And exactly like a little kid that doesn't have any da'at, any knowledge, any comprehension. And that little kid will come to me with a knife, and a normal father will take the knife away because the father knows that the knife, chas v'shalom, the kid can hurt himself. Or chas v'shalom, hurt somebody else. Or do damage. The kid doesn't understand that. For the kid, the knife is a toy. The kid is not happy when the father takes the knife away. The relationship here is that the father knows and understands and sees something more clear, and the kid just sees a little toy. And for the kid, the father now is the worst father in the world because he took away his toy. And the way to see it is in a relationship between a parent and a child, because a child doesn't understand what's good for them. Even when they become a little bit more mature and they become already teenagers, they still think that they know what's good for them, but the parent, I'm talking about normal parents in this example, they look down and they see, no, this is not the good thing, and I know because I already been through it, or I'm much more mature. Bechlal, we know that we only get the level of what's called da'at when we reach 20. So till 20, we're functioning with missing one element, and the element is called da'at. Da'at is basically the knowledge, the ability to see things and to understand things the right way. If you're looking at the structure of the sefirot, the first sefirah, that if we count from the sefirot of the mochin, which are chokhmah, bina, and da'at, so the first sefirah is chokhmah. This is the wisdom, the thought behind the concept. But it's just a nekuda, just a point. It's not dissected, it's not understood, it's not clear. Comes the chokhmah of bina and starts dissecting it, starts breaking it, starts explaining it. But then comes the sefirah of da'at and explaining it in a way that I can actually understand what it means. So we as human beings, we only get the level of da'at when we reach the age of 20. Unfortunately, some people that don't even need the age of 50 don't even reach the level of da'at. The point is that when I try to go with my instincts or with my knowledge, I'll never get anywhere. You see how in previous shiurim I always repeat that our main problem that will stop me from going anywhere is my ego. If I let my ego drive me, I will never get anywhere. My life will be a disaster and I'm not going to have any success in anything. Not in business, not in marriage, not in finding my other half, not in educating my kids, not in anything. People who have a strong ego are bound to fail in everything. Needless to say in Avodat Hashem. Hashem and a human being that has ego cannot dwell together. Hashem says if there's another metziut, another existence, but me, I cannot be there. So a person who has an ego will never be successful in anything. And the ego can be big and the ego can be small. Doesn't matter. Ego is what's called metziut, yeshut, that I am something. The Torah comes to teach us, you want to be great? Humble yourself. Diminish yourself. Make yourself a nothing. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu was the biggest prophet in history, because he was the most humble person in history. He was able to humble himself to a point that I don't have a will. That my will is the Ratzon HaElyon, the supreme will of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And if I work on myself, that I humble myself to a point that I'm only in the level of what's called a mekabel, a receiver, I only receive, then I become the ultimate giver. If you look in the structure of the spiritual worlds, we know of four spiritual worlds. There are endless amount of spiritual worlds. But in general, they are broken into four spiritual worlds. The world of Atzilut, Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya. Besides these four worlds, there are numerous and endless amount of other worlds. But if you look at the structure of these four worlds, each one of them are built from 10 Sfirot, which the highest Sfira in each world is called Keter, and the lowest Sfira in each world is called Malchut. Seemingly, it seems like Malchut will be the lowest Sfira, because in the hierarchy of the Sfirot, it's always the lowest. But the Malchut of the world that is above the world below is the higher Sfira, because Malchut now is above Keter. So ultimately, Malchut, which is the Sfira that is only a Sfira of receiving, of Mekabel, Malchut has nothing from itself. It can only receive from the Sfirot above it. So ultimately, one might say Malchut is the lowest Sfira in the structure, but when you're looking at it, Malchut is the highest Sfira because it's the Sfira above Keter from the world below. And in that's what I was about to say, that in the spiritual structure, Na'utz Sofan Betchilatan, everything is a cycle. So even if you're looking again, one might say that in hierarchy, the world of Asiyah, the Malchut of Asiyah is the lowest. But when it says Na'utz Sofan Betchilatan, which means that the, like a circle, like a ring, the end is connected to the beginning, because ultimately the lowest Sfira, Malchut of Asiyah, is this world, is the actual doing mitzvot, which in essence, a person that does mitzvot, he reaches the highest level, because by doing a physical mitzvah in the world of Asiyah, I actually bring down to the world the ultimate, the highest level of godly revelation, which is called Or Ensof. This is Na'utz Sofan Betchilatam. It's a circle, it's a cycle. So even, yeah, Malchut might seem in the lowest world, the lowest. There's a Mishnah that says, Yafa Sha'a Achad B'Tshuva V'Ma'asim Tovim Mikol Chayei Olam Haba. 1 hour of tshuva and good deeds in this world is greater than the entire world to come. Why? Because when I do a mitzvah in this world, a physical mitzvah, the spiritual act that I cause is I bring down to this world the highest level of godly revelation. Or Ensof, Atzmut. And I become united with it. A mitzvah comes from the word tzavta. Not necessarily commandment, tzivui, rather tzavta. Tzavta is a chibur, is a unity. The ultimate unity with the highest level of godly revelation comes only from a physical mitzvah. I can sit and learn Torah all day long. I will never reach to that level. There were very few people in history, like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that were able, with their thoughts and mouth, reach to the level of Asiyah. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was sitting in a cave. He didn't have tefillin. He didn't have lulav. He didn't have sukkah. He didn't have all these physical mitzvot. He was able to do the same hamshacha, the same effect with his thoughts. But we're not Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We need the physical mitzvot. But the highest level one can reach is through a physical mitzvah. This is where it comes back to where I said before, that the Torah sometimes will contradict my opinion. Because the person will say, why do I need a leather strap to tie on my hand for 45 minutes to get connected to God? I'll just be a nice person. So it doesn't work like that. Hashem gave us physical things to connect with Him. Okay, I'm going to answer you at the end of the class because it has nothing to do with the topic. But remember the question, and before we leave, ask it again and I'll answer you. So to come back to our topic, ultimately we all came down here to fix our midot, our attributes. A lot of people think that my neshama is damaged. People say, I have to fix my neshama. My neshama, my soul is perfect. There's no problem with my soul. We read every morning, neshama shenatata bitorai, my soul is pure. My soul is perfect. It does not have any damage. There's no such a thing. The only thing that we... Yeah, that's metameh et haneshama. It doesn't damage the neshama. The way to explain it, the easiest way, is that I have a shirt, then I have a tzitzit, then I have another shirt, then I have a jacket, I have a pants, I have a lot of garments on me. If you throw at me now a bucket full of dirt, then my garments will get dirty. But me, my essence, will not get dirty. I take off my garments, I wash them, I put them back on, now I'm clean again. But the essence, the neshama, does not get hurt. It can be, like you're saying, metameh. It just puts dirt on it. So something as simple as going to the mikveh removes it. But the essence of the neshama, the atzmut of the neshama, does not get damaged. A person can do the worst sins. What it will affect will be the nefesh and the ruach. The neshama can get dirty, but what gets dirty is the levushim, which are the garments. Excuse me, if a person does tshuva in this world, he removes these tuma, this impurity, this dirt. If he doesn't, he goes to the heavenly dry cleaner and they wash it off. So a person can be 70% good and 30% not so good. And the heavenly court will decide that he's going to Gehinnom. Gehinnom is a washing machine. And the Gehinnom, the process, will wash off all the dirt, and then the neshama is clean and can go into Gan Eden. The person still gets Gan Eden. He did 70%. He will still have to come down and complete what he's missing. But the 70% that he did, the piece of the neshama is sitting in Gan Eden. When we come down here, we don't come, our neshama, our soul down here is not 100% here. Could very much be that only 20% of your neshama is right now operating in this world, and 80% is sitting in Gan Eden and waiting. The Arizal explains in Shara Gilgulim that every Gilgul, every reincarnation that we come, whatever we fix, sits in Gan Eden. So now I can have 20% of my Ruach in Gan Eden, 40% of my Nefesh in Gan Eden, 25% of my neshama in Gan Eden, and the rest is here. Whatever I fixed, that's it, it's fixed, it's up there. So I'm not able to even to damage it. A lot of people think that whatever good that I did is messed up if I did something bad. It's not true. Whatever is good that I did, that's already sitting in Gan Eden and waiting. Then I come down to do the rest. So we're not going to get into reincarnations and Shara Gilgulim, but if you're interested to know about it, open that book. It's not so easy to understand because the language is not so easy, but if that's interesting you, then read it. It has unbelievable depth explaining about the whole structure of reincarnations and why we come down here and all that stuff. But the thing is that the essence of our soul cannot be damaged. What will be damaged will be the ruach and the nefesh, which are the lower levels of the neshama. Yes, that can be damaged. And all the garments that my soul is dressed in it. But in essence, my neshama is 100% pure, it's perfect. The neshama is like a hand getting dressed into a puppet. And if you move now your finger like this, then the puppet will move its hand. And then you move this finger, and then the puppet will move the other hand. And then you just move your hand, and the whole puppet makes a show. The neshama gets dressed into the ruach, into the nefesh, into garments, and the neshama operates and moves in this world. Once the neshama pulls out, that's it. Nothing is left. That's why we know, according to Kabbalah, that when a person, before he dies, 30 days before the death, then every day one piece of the neshama leaves the body, and the day that the person dies, the neshama already left the body. A few hours before the person dies, the ruach leaves the body. Then when it's time to die, the thing that is left in the body is what's called nefesh. And right when the neshama and the soul and the ruach, they leave the body, the nefesh doesn't have any protection. So it goes into the heart, locks itself into the heart, then comes death. The heart stops. So what stays in the body the last couple of hours is only the nefesh. The neshama and the ruach, they leave. Ultimately, we're working on the level of nefesh. When we are born, the level of our soul that we received for free is nefesh. And if I lived my life the right way, then in 13 for a boy and 12 for a girl, I get ruach. And if I lived my life the right way from bat mitzvah and bar mitzvah, when I say live my life the right way, I don't have any sins, and I do Torah and mitzvahs, then at the age of 20, I will get my neshama. And to reach to the level of getting the neshama is not so easy. A lot of people, they don't reach to that level because they're doing a lot of mitzvot, but they're also doing a lot of bad things. So they can't elevate themselves. Of course it's tshuva. No doubt. The level of neshama. I don't want to really sidetrack from our topic. I'm just giving you different examples. This is the level of neshama. This is what's called b'chinat neshama. It's not necessarily the actual neshama. You have to understand, I'll give you an example. Imagine now you have a telescope or binoculars, and it can only enlarge 1,000 times. So when I look at it, I can see from here to Har Meron, I can see very good. But if I want to look at the Kinneret, I'll never reach. So then I add an extension. Now I can see 10,000 times greater. So the same binoculars with an extension can see much further. Then if I want to see even more of that, I want to see to the moon. Then I add another extension that will enlarge it 100,000 times. And then I see even closer. So this is levels in my tool that allows me to see further away. It's not exactly like that with a neshama, but every time I get a higher level, I'm able to reach to a much higher level. So if I want to reach to a higher level in the spiritual world, I need a greater tool, a greater capacity to in order to elevate me to a higher level. So this is what's called the level of the neshama. It's not the neshama itself. This is much more complicated. Again, going back to Shaar HaGilgulim of the Arizal, but it's not our topic. So going back to our topic, is mainly what I came down to do in this world is to correct my midot, is to work on my midot, my attributes. The attributes can be kaas, anger, can be patience, can be tolerance, can be tzniut, it's the midah, can be laziness. All these things. Now the good things I don't have to work on because I already am born with it. This is what's called character, ofi. In Hebrew, character is ofi and midot are attributes. So I'm born with what's called ofi, with my character. I can be very positive person. I can be very generous. I can be stingy. I'm born with my character. My character I cannot change. That's not such a thing. And a person who tries to change his character is mamash kofer b'maseh bereshit, going against the structure how Hashem created the world. Hashem created the world in a certain way. We just read last parasha about the concept of kil'ayim, that you're not allowed to mix certain things. You're not allowed to mix wool and linen. We're not allowed to mix different fruit together when we plant them. We're not allowed to mix animals together. So this is called kil'ayim. The point of kil'ayim, the explanation behind kil'ayim, is that Hashem created the world a certain way, and if I'm now taking a donkey and a horse, and I put them together, I'm trying to shift the Maaseh Bereshit, how Hashem created the world. If Hashem wanted to create another species that is half donkey, half horse, He would create it. That's why I'm not allowed to do it. There's mystical reasons behind each and everything. But the point is that there are laws in the Torah that I'm not allowed to mix certain things. This is called Kil'ayim. When I try to change my character, in a very fine way, I'm going against what Hashem wanted to create initially. That's why I'm not allowed to change my character. You see that in many times, a person who becomes religious, a Baal Tshuva, 20, 30 years he lives a certain way, then he becomes religious. And he thinks he has to change his character. And it's the worst thing to do because you cannot change your character. And if you're going against your character, you're only going to meet a wall because it's not you. You can't be not you.
What's an example for a difference between a character trait and...
We're going to get to that. We're going to get to exactly what's the difference between a character and an attribute, midah ve'ofi. You all speak Hebrew, so it's important that you know in Hebrew. Midah is an attribute. In Hebrew, since you all know Hebrew, midah can also be a measurement. Ofi is a character. That's his character. That's it. You can't change the character. And it's important for you to know, because very soon when you're going to start looking for a husband, a lot of people look at another half and they think they can refine the other half or change the other half. No, that's his character. Live with it. And other people think that they will meet their other half, and when they see things that they don't like, first of all, they make an X, I don't want to see this guy anymore. Which is the biggest mistake, because first of all, if your other half comes with 30% of things that you're not going to like, that's your other half, deal with it. You're not going to be able to change it. And the only way to know how to deal with it is to look in the mirror and to say, I'm not that great either. The point is that we cannot change a character, but we can take a midah and work on the character. So if my character is to be very generous, so generosity is a very good thing, but that sometimes generosity is not a good thing. Because if I'm going to do something bad with my generosity, the generosity has to be controlled. How would it be controlled? With one of my midot. Now, if my character of generosity, I want to apply it to something good, then I would take the attribute, the midah of chesed, of kindness, and I will use the midah, now take the explanation of measurement, and will add a lot of chesed into the attribute of generosity, and I will empower it. So when it comes for me to help another person, I will help him even more. It's going to be with no gvulot, but I'm doing it for a mitzvah. But if chas v'shalom, I want to use my generosity into a negative thing, chas v'shalom, usage of drugs or alcohol, I'm very generous, I want to give a lot of it, but I'm using it to a totally different thing, to a bad thing. Here has to come the midah of gvura, severity, and to stop it, to pull me back. You can't give too much right here. So almost in any ofi, in any character that you have, you can do a lot of it, you can do less of it. It has to be controlled. That's the whole different thing. That's Bezrat Hashem, what we're going to do in the next couple classes. We're going to go through one. Now I'm kind of giving you a very general overview of the concept. Because if you really dissect it, everything in this world originates from the 10 sefirot. The highest sefirah is called Keter. Keter is a crown. If you're looking at the structure of the sefirot and you're removing Keter, the sefirot are Chochma, Bina, and Daat, which are the intellect, the Mochin, and then you have the Midot, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malchut. Before Malchut, this is what's called the Zeir Anpin, the Midot, and then Malchut is the lowest sefirah. They all correspond to the name of Hashem, Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei. Chochma is Yud, Bina is Hei. All six Midot, Zeir Anpin, are corresponding to Vav, and the Malchut is the Hei Achrona, the last Hei. The Hei, the lowest Hei in Kabbalah is called Rachel, and the first Hei, the Ima Tetha'a, is called Leah. Our job in this world is to constantly connect the lowest Hei to the highest Hei. Hei Tetha'a to Hei Ilah. The Hei Achrona, the last Hei of the letter of the name of Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, to the first letter of Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei. That's why we have two mothers, Leah and Rachel. Ultimately, they are connected together. Our job in this world is to work on our midot, which are called Yaakov. In the Kabbalistic terminology, it's called Yichud Zun. I have to do a Yichud, a connection between all the midot. By me doing that, I'm able to elevate the Malchut into Bina. That's basically what I need to do in this world. Now, ultimately, above these Sefirot is the Sefirah of Keter. Keter is a crown. A crown is something that surrounds, like a crown that you put on your head. If you're looking at the structure of the Sefirot, we do not count Da'at in the Sefirot. So it starts by Keter Chochma Bina, as the intellect, as the Mochin, and then the Sefirot. Keter has two levels into it. Has what's called Chitzoniyut HaKeter, the external part of the Keter, and Pnimiyut HaKeter, the internal part of the Keter. I explained to you in one of the classes that there are 36 sins in the Torah that are called Karet. That the effect, that when a person does it, it chops off the neshama. This is called karet. Two mitzvot are positive, circumcision and korban pesach, the sacrifice of pesach, and 34 are negative. The ones that relate to us is Shabbat, desecrating Shabbat, Yom Kippur, eating, driving, working, Pesach, eating chametz, all the forbidden relations, and all the rest of the karet Averot that really have nothing to do with that. It has to do with eating meat from the sacrifices, doing witchcraft, stuff like that. If Chas v'Shalom a person does one of these sins, a person now goes and desecrates Shabbat, knowingly, what happens is that all 9 sefirot get chopped off, like a rope. Our soul is connected to God with a spiritual rope. The same way that a physical rope is built from many, many strings, the spiritual rope is built from 620 strings, corresponding to 613 mitzvot from the Torah and 7 mitzvot from the sages. If I serve Hashem in completion, all my strings are intact. If I chas v'shalom start cutting these strings by doing sins or not doing mitzvot, then my rope becomes thinner and thinner. If chas v'shalom I do one of these 36 sins, I cut the entire rope. And then I have to do tshuva. And if I don't do tshuva, then I in the status of karet, I'm chopped off. No Wi-Fi. No data. I have a phone, but I can't connect to the data. I don't know the password for the Wi-Fi. Excuse me?
Till you do
tshuva. Till I do tshuva. The Rizal says a person that did an avera of karet, a sin of karet, it's a walking dead body. The neshama left. We are looking at people in the street, dead bodies just walking around, they're functioning. The Rizal is saying that the reason why they're able to function for 40, 50 years is because there's an impression. He calls it reshimu. Comes from the word roshem. You take now a stamp and you press it hard, it leaves an impression. So there's an impression in the body from the neshama, so the person can still live for 40, 50 years. But the neshama left. There's no neshama. Till he does tshuva. And to do tshuva for karet is not an easy thing, because you have to take two entities and connect them back together. The advantage that we have is that the karet only affects the first 9 sefirot. The sefirah that it does not affect is ketel. Amazingly, we see that the same letters of karet and ketel are the same letters. This is only because Avraham Avinu made a deal with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. He told him, you take 9 sefirot, you leave me 1 sefirah that the person can do tshuva. So a person that was born religious, can chas v'shalom fail in the avera of karet. Forbidden relations, Shabbat, Pesach, it's nogea to us. If you do it by mistake, there's no effect of karet. But if you do it knowingly, you know, then chas v'shalom a person has to do serious tshuva. The reason I'm telling you that is because the shoresh, everything has a shoresh, what's called a root. It starts somewhere. The shoresh of all the sefirot, the root of all the sefirot is karet, is ketel. Everything starts in the ketel. And all the rest of the sefirot, mishtalshel, they descend down from that sefira. So ultimately, when I want to know how to work in this world, I have to go to the source. If I know how the source is built and what I have to derive from this source, then I'll know how to work in this world. Now, the sefira of Keter, it has 3 main characters. The first and most important and the highest level is called Ratzon, will. The second one is called Machshava, thought. And the third one is called Regesh, an emotion. Everything is born from the level of what's called Ratzon, my will. Why do I do anything? Because I want it. Why do I eat? Because I want to eat. Because I'm hungry. There's going to be always a chain of reactions. Why does a person go to a college to learn to be a lawyer? Because he wants to have a good job. Why does he want to have a good job? Because he wants to have money. Why does he want to have money? Because he wants a nice car. Why does he want a nice car? Because it's much more comfortable than a non-nice car. And he wants everybody to look at him and to see that he has a nice car. Etc., etc. There's always another ratzon over a ratzon over a ratzon, a desire, a will over and over. So the thing is that if I want to know exactly what's the original, I have to start peeling off layers. This is what's called to legalot, to reveal the ultimate ratzon. Now, if you now look at your basic behavior, and you do not analyze it, then most likely your ratzon, your desire, will come from the wrong place. That's where we start running into issues in our life. Why am I going to run into issues in my life? Because my vessel is empty, because I'm not pulling into it the right ratzon, the right will. Everything in this world has a vessel, and there's a light. The vessel holds the light, and the light comes to fulfill, to fill the vessel. If I have now a cup, and I'm very thirsty, and I have an empty cup, I can pour water in it, and the cup will hold my water. But if I don't have a vessel, and you want to give me water, I cannot hold it. It will spill. If my vessel is broken, then the water will run away. If you want to give me a big quantity and my vessel is very small, what you want to give me will not fit in. If I have a very big vessel and I put something very small in it, then it's not full. You can see all these examples from how kids behave. Give a kid now a big cup and give his brother a small cup. Pour to their cups the exact same quantity of the juice. The kid that has the big cup that seems that he got less will complain, "Hey, I got less." No, you got the exact same measurement. "No, look, my cup is empty, his cup is full." Yeah, but the measurement of what I poured in is exactly the same. So when my vessel is not full, I feel what's called a chisaron, something's missing. I want to get to a point that my vessel is complete. So sometimes I can build a very big vessel, but it's empty, there's nothing in it. This is what happens to people. Hashem Yerachem, unfortunately, one of the biggest sins for us as Jews and non-Jews is idol worship. Now, idol worship, people think that it's bowing to a statue. That's not yet. That's also idol worship. That's what they did 2,000 years ago. But in our generation, there's also many different forms of idol worship, of Avodah Zarah. Why is it called in Hebrew Avodah Zarah, idol worship? It's not idol worship, because if you want to translate it, it will be Avodat Elilim, working an idol, idol worship. But in Hebrew it's called Avodah Zarah. Zarah comes from the word foreign. Avodah Shezarali, it's foreign to me, it's not my Avodah. And in our generation there's many types of forms of Avodah Zarah, of idol worship. A person can idol worship his car, and wash it all day long, his job, anything. Unfortunately, we're not going to get to that in this shiur. In one of the shiurim, we're going to talk about idol worship, because a lot of people in our generation can like this fail in our idol worship, in Avodah Zarah. Why? Because they take a certain reality and distort it and think that that is the reality, which is totally the shekel. That's the ultimate yetzer hara, that it will come and distort the reality to a point that I believe that this is truth. And I live in a world of shekel. And the result will be that it will take me away from Hashem, and the result will be what's called Avodah Zarah, idol worship. Now what happens in our generation, I'll give you one example, is a lot of people do all sorts of meditations. They go to India, they go to the Far East, and they connect to all sorts of sources of impurity, and they meditate on that. On the surface, on what's called chitzoniyut, the external part, they get some type of a pleasure because they are bringing something into the world. But since they're not building the right vessel, then there's not a good relationship. So ultimately, they have the ultimate emptiness. And one example, I don't know if you know, a lot of people when they meditate, when they do meditation, they chant a certain word. This word is one of Hashem's names. Aleph Vav Mem. They say Om. You know what I'm talking about? When they meditate? Better that you not know. Don't know. But there's one form of meditation that they take Hashem's name, Aleph Vav Mem, and they meditate on it and they chant it. I don't want to repeat it because I don't want a Chas V'Shalom that's going to be a relation to it. But they say the name and they meditate on the name. Now in essence, yeah, they're connecting to a real godly power. Yeah. But they're tapping into a spiritual, real, godly light. But they're bringing it down with the wrong vessel. So what happens is, their vessel inflates and inflates and inflates. They have a huge vessel now, because they're drawing down this godly light. But since they're not practicing Torah and mitzvahs, there's no light at all. So the end up result with a massive vessel, completely empty.
What if they did practice prayer and meditation?
Excuse me?
What if they are practicing prayer and meditation?
Then they start filling the vessel with light.
But then I'm saying, like, would chanting that be bad?
But this is the ultimate shekel. That's what I want to talk about in a minute. That we, a lot of time, take something that it seems to us like it's the truth, because it does do certain result, like you're saying, it relaxes them. But if it's coming from the wrong source, the external part will feel the 5-minute relaxation, but the end result will be emptiness, will be sadness, will be a lack of something. So when a person has a very big vessel and no light, the result will be depression, sadness, emptiness, lack of a matarav, like a point in this world, despair. That's the problem with most of the avodah zarah in this world, because on the external part, it gives them the 5-minute relaxation. But this is the ultimate shekel, the ultimate lie. It's a drug. What does a drug do? A person has now a headache. What does most people do? They take a pill. Then the headache disappears. What do they really do? They just numb the nerve system. That's it. So now they don't feel the pain. But the pain inside, the symptom is still in there. The pain is inside. But they covered the pain now with a pill. So for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, there's no pain. Because the nerve is numb. This is Advil. This is Motrin. All these things. They don't do anything to the symptom. Why do you have a headache? Your body is telling you something's wrong. So instead of me going and taking a pill to numb the problem, the other way around. Instead of me dealing with the symptom, then I take a pill and I numb the problem. And I think that I solved the problem. So for 10 minutes or for an hour, for 2 hours, the pain is gone. So it's true, the pill worked. But in essence what happened, I just numbed the pain and I didn't deal with the symptom. And if I have a headache, it means that either I'm dehydrated, maybe I didn't eat, maybe I'm lacking sleep. The body is telling me something's wrong. So all these things are like plasters. So yeah, a person will meditate for a whole hour. It will relax them. They'll feel content a little bit. They'll feel a little bit focused. But that will only work for a certain amount of time, and then it would wear off. And when it wears off, the pain is triple. Because there's no kli to hold it. There's no vessel to hold now this light that they brought down to this world. So the thing is that many people in our generation, they fail in idol worship because they do a certain thing and they think it's coming from the right place, but it's actually not coming from the right place. It's coming from the worst place. Do we have to finish exactly 12? There's another class? Okay, we'll go a little bit more, because we started a little bit later. The point is that half of what I do comes from a ratzon, from a desire that's coming from the wrong place. I see something the completely wrong way. My point is right now to reach to the source and find what's the desire, the ratzon, the will that I need to operate by, that needs to motivate me. Now we're going to talk about in one of the next classes, how do I get to it? Because the only way to get to it is through tefillah, through praying, and through something that is called hitbodedut. And hitboninut. Hitbodedut is when a person locks himself, doesn't matter where, it can be in a forest, can be in a room. Hitbodedut means to levoded, to isolate the nefesh. To turn the phone off, turn the music off, turn everything off. Turn all the switches off in the brain and to concentrate on one point. And that point is to pull out the Ratzon Elyon, the ultimate will of Hashem. We'll talk about that too. The point is to understand is that I have to first go into the source. Because first I have a Ratzon, I have what's called a desire, a will. That will start developing into a thought. That's why we have so many thoughts. Now if you ever once meditate on your thoughts, if you now stop, close the doors, close the lights, close your phone, and start meditating on your thoughts. Don't try to move yourself. Just sit and watch your thoughts. you will see that you have a chaos in your mind. Just sit and disconnect yourself from the reality for once, for 10 minutes. And just look at your thoughts like a movie. Just close your eyes and look at your thoughts, because thoughts constantly come into your mind. Constantly. You can't control your thoughts. And if you really meditate on that, you'll see within 5-10 minutes there's chaos in your mind. And half of your thoughts are insane, insane thoughts. What you would want to do to something, to somebody. What you would want to say to somebody. I want to do this, I want to do that. Our thoughts are chaos. Now you want to start making order in these thoughts. So the thing is that the ratzon, the will, molid, it brings down a thought. And from the thought will come what's called an emotion, regesh. Anger, love, happiness, all the regashot, the emotions. And that's what we're going through. We are being controlled by our emotions. Now, if I go to the source, I cannot deal with emotions. If a person is sad, you cannot talk to the sadness. You cannot calm the person down by talking to the person to change his sadness. If a person is extremely upset right now, you cannot reason with the person. You cannot talk to the person. He's upset right now. Why? Because emotions are out of control. You can't control the emotion. You have to go to the source. So ultimately, we want to learn and to take all the tools how to deal in this world. Because if my emotions are out of control, then my life is going to be a chaos. It's going to be a disaster. And the reality is that we're all dealing with our emotions. And the emotions, we blame it on everybody. My parents, they're annoying me. I'm annoyed because my parents annoy me. Or my wife or my husband. But we tend to blame everybody for the problems that I'm dealing with. And in most cases, all the negative emotions, we cannot deal with them. We have to go to the source to change and fix the source in order for my emotion to be correct and right. Because ultimately, what do we all want? We all want the same thing. We want to be happy. We want to be relaxed. We want to be content. We want to be fulfilled, satisfied. That's what we all go after. So we run after certain things to get to this level of happiness. So some people think that if they'll have a lot of money, they'll get a nicer car and a nicer house and more clothes, and that's what's going to make them happy. So they go and run after a job. They hate their job. But they know that the job will provide them money, that will provide the newer and nicer car, etc., etc., and ultimately will come to what they want, is the happiness. But who says that they're actually going to get the money and the car and the clothes and this through this happiness, through this job? They might never make it. That's why sometimes you see people, they go and spend 7 years in university to be a doctor. And then they spend 30 years to learn. And then they find themselves in the age of 50 and they hate what they do. And they're the worst doctor in history. So 30, 40 years was wasted on nothing because they had a ratzon, they had a desire to have status or money or a beautiful home, etc., etc. And they went and they ran after something that was completely, completely empty. Running after like nonsense of emptiness. And many people find themselves in the middle of their life and they're like, wait a minute, all my life I wasted on nothing, on air. So the point is to know what is driving me. And if I can reach to the point of what drives me, I'm going to be able to pull the strings that it will manifest into my world, that anything that I do is based on the truth, on the shoresh, on the root of things, and then I reach to the ultimate happiness. Whatever you think brings you happiness is not necessarily what will bring you happiness. And ultimately, we all want to be happy. If a person says, my main goal in life is not to be happy, there's no such a thing. Because we're constantly searching for happiness and things that will fulfill us. Why? Because we want our vessel to be full. And if my vessel is not full, I'm not happy. And if I build myself a huge vessel and I don't know how to fill it in, then my vessel will be empty. I'm never going to be happy. I'm always going to be sad. Always going to be empty. That's the problem with the ta'anugot of the pleasures of this world. Is because I'm building a vessel and I'm building and building and building, but the vessel is completely empty. That's why half this world is depressed.
How do you build your vessel?
You can build a vessel I'm right now talking about when somebody's building a vessel the wrong way. That the vessel is not 100% fitting to the light. There's always a relations of light and vessel. So if I do a mitzvah right now, then I build a vessel. The light that I will that will fill the vessel will be the light that Hashem gives me by me doing the actual mitzvah. This is a healthy relationship. But I can build a vessel in the wrong way. Like I gave one of many examples of idol worship. A person can pursue a certain thing. And I'll give you an example in a second, because it's something that that happened to us this week, and I'll give you a very good example. But the thing is that a lot of people build spiritual vessels that are based on sheker, on lie, on nothing, and then there's no light to fill it in, because the mitzvah will not go into that vessel. Any good thing that is based on the Torah will not go into that vessel. The result will be an empty vessel. So they will get the 5-minute relaxation from the meditation, but the inside is empty. Completely empty. And when the inside is empty, the person is completely not happy, not satisfied, and that person will point on everything to blame it.
I don't...
Yes or no? Some things will take years, some things are instant. The thing is that you can't really measure it because we don't really know when it started. But I'm going to give you an example in a second that you'll see more clear. The point is that when a person, the vessel is empty or damaged, it's two different things. We're going to talk about everything. I know you probably have a lot of questions, but Bezrat Hashem, in the next 5 weeks till we're done, we're going to talk and cover everything. The point is what I want to give you over before you leave and starting your life is that you have the basic tools how to deal with this world. If you don't have tools to deal with this world, people are going confused in this world. So they don't know what to do with themselves. They don't know where to live. They don't know when to get. Should I get married? I shouldn't get married. Should I do this job? Should I go and study? Should I go and work? They're confused. They're constantly confused. So it starts with young people when they're 18, 19, 20, and they think they're confused because they don't have the guidance. People that are 50 years old are confused, trust me, because they don't have the right guidance. And it's not about guidance. It's about that they don't know what's the ultimate ratzon. What's the will? What am I supposed to do here? If a person will sit down and will say, why am I in this world? Why did God put me in this world? To be a lawyer? To be a gardener? To what? Why did God put me in this world? There's a reason for that. If I want to have a successful life, I have to find out what's this reason. And when I will find out what's the reason that God put me in this world, I'm going to be the happiest person in the world because I'm going to go after it. And I'm going to do it. And then my life will be perfect. I'll be fine. Now, it doesn't mean life will be perfect. Even though there's going to be ups and downs in this life. But the problem with the majority of the people of the world is they don't have what's called a direction. So they're lost. And this will result again. The term that I'm using is an empty vessel. Empty vessel will result in depression, in sadness, with no matara, with no destination, confusion. This will result that a person will look to blame everybody. So my boss is a bad boss. My wife is horrible. My parents annoy me. Why? That's already my ego telling me, no, everybody's wrong. I'm right. Because I can only be right, and everybody else is wrong. So this is all a result. It's another level after another level after another level that I'm so distant from the source. And if I go back to the source, I'll see that, wait a minute, 90% of the times I'm the one who was wrong. And it's not my husband that is annoying me. It's that I have a problem. It's not my boss that is mean. I have a problem. We're just very hard for us to look in the mirror and say, I'm wrong. So the point what I want to give over is to you is to how to find the path that you can derive from it the right information to be able to deal with your life and to find your purpose in this world. And if you find your purpose in this world, you'll be a very happy person. You're going to get everything that you want. You're going to know how to deal with things. And most important, you're not going to fall into this state of emptiness. And this state of emptiness can result in many things. Like I told you, it can be depression, it can be sadness, it can be anything. Go and interview married people. Half of them will tell you they have a horrible marriage. They hate their marriage. They're sad. They're depressed. They're annoyed. And they blame it on the other half. 90% of them is their own problem. Because they are not focused. They're not going on the right path. They're pulling too much lights into small vessels. Or they're not putting any light into big vessels. The point is that we have to legalot et haratzon ha'elyon, to reveal the ultimate ratzon, which ultimately comes from Hashem, because if you're looking at the structure of the soul, The lowest level is nefesh, then ruach, then neshama, then chaya, then yechida. Above the yechida dwells the shechina. And it constantly gives, it projects on the soul. I just need to know how to center myself to be able to bring it down. That's why you see great tzaddikim, they're relaxed. They don't scream. They don't... Excuse me?
I just noticed recently that like some people more like men learn, they don't like when they talk in their mouth, not their whole body. They don't like wave around.
Well, that can be different. I know people, I know great tzaddikim that they move the body. What I'm saying is that their emotions are very relaxed. In one of the next classes, we're going to talk about how we deal with our emotion. Yeah, exactly. That's a style. Wait, hold on before the questions. So the point is, I want to give you one example that you understand kind of what I'm talking about. Then we're going to go for a little bit of questions. The point is to kind of summarize the shiur, and next shiurim we're going to talk about how are we refining this Ratzon Elyon, this ultimate, the ultimate will, so I'm able to bring it down into my machshava, to my thought, so ultimately it will affect my emotions. Now, recently somebody that we know came and told us that they're doing a certain thing. A certain thing that on the surface looks very, very positive by healing people and doing all sorts of things. When I was first approached with this whole system about a year and a half ago when I lived in Los Angeles, somebody came and told me, this is the system, we do like this and like that, and we heal other people, but we're using these techniques and these methods, is it idol worship? That person came to me about a year and a half ago, and told me, this is our system. Is it idol worship? And I told that person, if you don't find a source to it in the teachings of the Torah, it's idol worship. Even though it seems like a very nice thing. That you're doing something very good, a lot of kindness, I'm helping other people, I'm healing them. But the system, how it was brought down, is completely distorted. Why? Because it's tapping in to something mystical, true, but bringing this godly light into an empty vessel. The total opposite of the will of Hashem. Which results in a fact that they think they're doing something good. Like you said, the meditation. They get some type of a relaxation. They see a result. You know, you can go now to a fortune teller. You're not allowed to. We're not allowed to go to fortune tellers. But a person go to a fortune teller that has powers to tap into to powers of impurity, and to see certain things and to be able to say something true. And we're like, wow, look, she told me my future. The only problem is that 50% of it is wrong. So you take a little bit of the truth and you apply it, and then the other 50% is wrong. But more than that, it's coming from a side of impurity. The result will be that the first effect, like a meditation, will relax you, will give you a result. But the end result will be the complete emptiness because it was drawn down to the world without a vessel. That's a light that is drawn down to the world without having a vessel to holding it. That's one of the problems of Yashka. He would bring down a lot of light into the world. He knew all the names of Hashem. He knew a lot of things with no vessel. The result is up until now you see the disaster. That's what he used to do. Excuse me?
Is there no way of remedying that? Like, can you make new containers up so that the light can go in?
If it's against Hashem's will, doesn't matter what you're going to do. It's just going to cause damage.
So
you have to learn what Hashem's will is. And if Hashem would want to bring a power of healing in a certain way, He would bring it to you and give you the permission. How do you think doctors can heal? Doctors don't do anything. They are a puppet in the hands of God. God gives them the permission to heal. The actual act of the healing is just a kli, a tool to bring the person back into being healthy. If Hashem doesn't give a person permission, nothing's going to happen. So if I go in the path of Hashem, I have permission from Hashem to use this method, it will work.
So is that like the show of full bringing in too much light without a kli or whatever, or making a big kli without light? Is that the...
We're going to talk in a different class, what does it mean bringing too much light into a small vessel? What does it mean to bring little light into a big vessel? We're going to talk about that because I'm just giving a general idea of the relations between always there's a light and a vessel. And the thing is, when do you feel the most happy? When you're satisfied. You can be hungry and walk around the city for 5 hours looking for a restaurant. And you're not eased because you're missing something. You need to fulfill right now your stomach. Once you ate and you're full, now I'm relaxed. Now I can be relaxed. This is a very low level of fulfilling an empty vessel. But in a greater scope, we're constantly running after pleasures. Things that one that makes us feel good. This is the relationship of the light and soul. Excuse me?
Automatic.
Nothing is automatic. You're right by saying that we operate in a very automatic way, but it's the wrong way. I have to be in control, not automatic. So if I'm running automatic, then it's not good. Excuse me? Addiction is a completely different thing. There's no such a thing as addiction, by the way. Addiction is just a desire that is out of control. Addiction is a very modern word, addiction.
You're opening a vessel and you're not doing it.
Yeah. It's out of control.
It's out of control.
In a very refined way, depends on the addiction, some of them, yeah. But the addiction, if you want, addiction is a very modern term that they say, oh, he's addicted. He's not addicted, he just doesn't know how to control his desire. That's it. That's why people are able to go off addictions. People quit smoking, people quit drugs, people stop gambling. It's just a desire that is out of control.
I don't understand what's wrong with using that word.
Excuse me?
But that's just a word for that definition.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. It's a modern word because in the olden days they didn't have such a word as addiction.
So what did they say?
I don't know what they said 300 years ago. But the concept today, people, doctors, psychologists, they blame certain things. Oh, he's addicted. But it's the wrong way of defining it. Because by me saying he's addicted is I'm taking right now his power to be able to heal himself.
So anything,
if I'm blaming him that he's addicted.
So anything you do from a place that's out of control, basically, I'm saying what are the differences? Why is something out of worship and something not? Because at the end of the day, you're opening the vessel,
not doing. So we'll talk about that too. Idol worship is everything that goes against the will of Hashem. So if something is against the will of Hashem, then it will be on the border or will be idol worship. But sometimes I can do things that are not necessarily against the will of Hashem, I just don't have control over it. That means that I have an issue that I have to deal with. But some things, they're out of control and they're against Hashem's will.
Isn't anything that's running yourself against Hashem's will?
Ultimately, but not always, because I can be addicted to food and it's not against Hashem's will. No, there's a big difference by drinking wine and being an alcoholic.
Exactly what I'm saying. It's not against Hashem's will to drink wine.
Exactly. That's why I said the example with food. You can be addicted to food.
And
not everyone. No, there's a big addiction. Addicted to food. No, addicted to food is when you buy 5 bars of chocolate every day. You don't eat it.
You
No, the thing is that the refined line in Hashem's will is that some things are permitted, some things are not permitted. Whatever is not permitted, it's against Hashem's will. Whatever is permitted and I'm abusing it, it's permitted by Hashem, but I'm abusing it. It's two different things. Whatever Hashem doesn't permit me to do, that's against His will, then I'm not allowed to do it. That's already what's called the isur, or prohibition, and I'm not allowed to do it. But Hashem allows me to eat, but I can abuse the eating by eating like an animal and all day long. But it's not a prohibition.
But the concept of food is not that.
Things that are not wrong are not abuse.
The point is to kind of summarize what you're asking is Avodah Zarah, idol worship, if you take the translation, is avodah, a work that I do, an action that I do, that is foreign. Zara is foreign. What does it mean foreign? That you're not going to find it in the Torah. If you find it in the Torah, it's not foreign, because that's what I'm supposed to do. If you can find it in the Torah, that's idol worship. And you don't have to bow to an idol. Now the point of idol worship is that I take my own will and I distort it how I think is good. That can also be idol worship. Now, if I take now this group of people, that I take a certain godly power that is out there, and I bring it down, but in a very distorted way. Why? Because they think that they are healing the person and not a God. That's where it already enters the border of Avodah Zarah, in that particular case. Because their system, I'm not going to repeat the whole system, it's not so important, but they feel that they are able to bring down refuah, health, to a certain person by their act. Now, if they would say, okay, I'm just putting now a plaster, or I'm poking you with needles, or I'm giving you a certain potion, a natural potion to eat, the refuah comes from the Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm just giving you the tool, then you're saying, okay, Hashem is the healer, not me. But when I'm saying, I'm healing you, that's already idol worship. Because I think that I'm healing you. I'm taking away the power from the real healer. That's where it comes really, the border of Avodah Zarah. That's why idol worship can be sometimes in a very refined line. You don't have to bow to an idol. When you think, there's a concept in the Torah that is called Kochi ve'otzem yodi. I did it. My power. Kochi is my power. Otzem yodi is the might of my hand. Kochi ve'otzem yodi means I did it. Hashem didn't do anything. I did it. How do you become a millionaire? Ooh, I worked hard. How did you buy this beautiful home? Oh, because I work hard from morning to night. No, you didn't do nothing. Hashem gave it to you. So the concept of Kochi ve'otzem yodi, that I did it in a very refined way, that's also Avodah Zarah. Now, it's not Avodah Zarah. There's a very refined line here. The reason why I brought Bechlal, the whole concept of idol worship, is because not to say that half of the things that we do are idol worship, rather that we have to come to the understanding that if I do something that I think it should be done how I want it to be done, it's in a very refined way like idol worship, because who's asking you what do you think? I didn't ask you. Hashem did not consult with us when He created the world. He told us this is how the world is functioning. Now when I come and distort it, then I'm going against the rules of this world. Now in a very severe way will be idol worship. The result will be, the reason why I brought it up is because the result will be a big vessel with no lights in it. Again, we're going to go through all these terms in the next couple of classes. But a big vessel with no light equals emptiness. What will come out of it will be sadness, depression, laziness. Hold on, because we're going to learn how to work on our midot. A person thinks that it's his character to be lazy. There's no such a thing of a character to be lazy. And we say, oh, I'm lazy, I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to come down to a class now, I'm lazy. Your mind will tell you, I'm lazy. You're not lazy. You're not lazy at all. So there's no such thing as laziness. This is what's called tolada. It's another generation of this emptiness that resulted from a large kli with no light, that now I'm becoming very lazy and I don't want to do things. That's not my character. That's something that I have to refine, is this midah of laziness. And one might say, I hate this subject, I don't want to learn it. This is boring me. No. It's an emptiness. Now our soul is built from four elements. Everything in this world is built from four elements. Fire, water, earth, and air. Whatever element will be in dominating, that's how I'm going to be functioning. So if my element of afar, of earth is strong, afar its nature is to pull something down, then I will become heavy and depressed and sad and lazy. My element of fire is in dominating. It can be both negative and positive. Negative, I'll be angry all the time. I'll be shouting. I'll be, you know, my instincts are like a fire. Kaas. And if the element of water is dominating, as I'm constantly going to be looking, searching, again, there's always, we're going to talk about that too. There's always positive and negative. The negative will be constantly searching after pleasures, because water brings pleasure. So every character that I have is also being, is built by these elements. So we're going to learn how to start recognizing every little thing and refining it, because ultimately you want to have tools that when you come into a point in your life, you're able to recognize it and not blame it on something, rather know how to fix it. Because if you're lazy and you don't want to get up in the morning for something, it's easy to blame it by saying something. It's harder to find the source of it and to fix it, and then I'm not going to be lazy anymore. And laziness will come as a result of this vessel being empty, so I become heavy. So one might say I'm depressed, I'm sad. Another person will result in laziness. So we're going to learn Bezat Hashem in the next shiurim. We'll try to go through all the midot. The ones that are important are anger, laziness, heaviness, depression, things like this. Even things that are more practical. One of the things that most people don't like hearing, especially the women, is the midah, the attribute of tzniut. Tzniut is not wearing a long dress or sleeves still here. It's a midah you have to work on. Men also have to be tzniut. That's a very big thing. We're going to talk about many different things that are nogea to all of us. Bezat Hashem will have the right tools to be able to refine ourselves and not only to have a happy and successful and content life, rather to fulfill my mission and my path in this world, so I can do the ultimate Ratzon HaElyon and never fail to do my will. If I'm going after my desire, my will, this is a recipe of failing. I have to look and search for what's Hashem's will, which is the opposite of idol worship. And if I'm able to do that, then I'm going on the path that Hashem paved for me. And I'm going to be able to refine my midot, work on my character. And again, not changing my character, just refining it, make it much better. And I'll give you one last example, because in my personal life, I had a certain character that was Behit Gabrut. And when I was directing it to a negative way, the result was disastrous. Now when I direct it into a positive way, then the result is unbelievable success in that particular thing. I'll give you examples for everything. I know you want examples. We're running out of time. But the point is that you can take the same character, direct it to something negative, the result is going to be a disaster. Disaster. Take the exact same character, direct it to something positive, you're going to be building worlds. An unbelievable success. Unbelievable success will automatically result into happiness and joy and content and all these good things. And that's the problem, is when I direct myself and I focus myself to the wrong source and I bring something in the wrong way, the result is going to be disaster. Like the example I gave you with this group of people. They think that they do something good, but they're bringing it in such a negative way, the result is a disaster. Maybe on the beginning, there's going to be healing. But the result that each and one of these individuals, the end result is a disaster. Total broken vessel. Which will result again in depression and emptiness and being lost. And it will result into manifesting into their parnasah, into their livelihood. Making money, the education of the kids. It's one big ball, like a snowball. It starts resulting into everything, and they don't understand. Why is business not working? Why I can't have a normal relationship with my husband? Why my children are not listening to me? It's all one. This it's one thing, because they're drawing too much light. Their vessels are completely broken. The result is a disaster, and nobody wants to live in a disaster, because the thing is the way it works, literally like a snowball. It just becomes bigger and bigger. Why? Because my emotions are already out of control. My thoughts are already out of control, because I'm constantly focusing on the wrong dot. The GPS tells me go there, I'm going there. I'm going to continue getting lost the whole time. Bezat Hashem, we have, I think, another 5 or 6 shiurim. We'll try to cover all of it in those times. Then Wednesday, we're going to have 2 hours. I think what we'll do like last time, that we'll do 1 hour or 1.5 the shiur, and then if you want maybe another 30 minutes, an hour of questions that are related to the class or even not related to the class. And if not, then we'll just continue in Bezat Hashem, try to cover as much as things as possible. You wanted to ask something before we're done?